Welcome to Conversations on Healthcare with Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter. Mark is the founder, president, and CEO of Community Health Center Incorporated, a provider of primary healthcare services for the uninsured and underserved in 13 cities and 218 service locations in Connecticut. Margaret is senior vice president and clinical director of CHC and is a family nurse practitioner by profession. Conversations on Healthcare is a weekly look at the people and ideas that are transforming the delivery of healthcare in America. And this week, Mark and Margaret interview Jeff Margolis, author of The Healthcare Cure: How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better. In the Tech Report segment, you'll hear Lauren Bonner's conversation with a physician focused on developing and using mobile innovations. And we begin with this week's bright idea. Here's Margaret Flinter.
Each week, Conversations highlights a bright idea about how to make wellness a part of our communities and everyday lives. This week's bright idea looks to a unique experiment in education that combines longer school days with increased physical activity. Don Community High School is a 157-student dropout recovery school in Cincinnati, Ohio.
I'm a true believer in education, and is that if you have physical fitness and healthy eating, it leads to better academic success.
Principal Ramon Davenport doesn't just want the students to earn their credits. He wants to see them reach their full potential. And he believes that physical fitness is one way to improve academic performance and that longer school days are a means to keep teens out of trouble. This year, the charter school created the very first mandatory after-school program in the state. Don's Let's Move Academy, modeled after Michelle Obama's Let's Move initiative to get kids moving and eating healthier, requires 9th and 10th graders to attend a 12-hour school day. But that's not all. The program also incorporates tutoring, 3 healthy meals, and 90 minutes of physical activity for the students. Using body mass index measurements, blood pressure screenings, and physical fitness tests, the school is tracking whether the students' health improves and how this has an impact on their academic success. Linking health to education to activity to give some students who might otherwise fall through the cracks a chance to succeed, now that's a bright idea.
Today, Margaret and I are speaking with Jeff Margolis, founder of the TriZetto Group, a healthcare technology solution provider. His new book is called The Healthcare Cure: How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better, being released this month and published by Prometheus Books. Welcome, Jeff.
Thank you, Mark.
You know, there are many books being released that talk about the U.S. healthcare system and lay out the problems from uncontrollable costs to poor health outcomes to fragmented care. And yet your book, as well as your work at the TriZetto Group since 1997, tell us that there's a solution, that the system is not beyond repair. And you call your plan the Integrated Healthcare Management System, and it sounds like a very powerful tool. And I noted in the back of the book, there was a reference of a study that had been done that suggested that using the system, you might be able to save the healthcare system between 20% and 30%. And you noted even on the conservative side, at 10%, it would be about $72 billion. So that's an incredible system. And so maybe you could take a little time and tell us about your vision and how you might get all the key constituents in the healthcare family working together for making a better healthcare system.
Fundamentally, what everyone can agree on, Mark, is that if we can align incentives between us as consumers and the way we think about our healthcare, and that we're actively engaged in thinking about improving our health status, and if we can align physicians, who are the only ones allowed to practice medicine in the United States, by the way, and we can put them on a course where they are incented to undertake the conversations and necessary steps to make sure they're not just treating patients for illness, but taking care of patients' total health, then we can get to integrated healthcare management.
Jeff, your early life and your early career certainly had a profound influence on the work that you've done since with TriZetto, and you speak very frankly about the experience of being a patient with a very significant chronic illness. And you know, we always say that the the doctor who has the same disease as the patient takes the best care of that patient. That kind of deep fundamental understanding of what's wrong is really a powerful lesson. And it gave you an opportunity to observe the healthcare system firsthand, but you also had deep training in system science and information technology and using those skills to solve complex problems in energy and banking and healthcare. What are the challenges that healthcare has in common with other industries, and which ones are really specific to healthcare that you had to wrestle with to get to your system of addressing the issues?
Well, I appreciate that question, Margaret, because, yes, my personal journey, of course, I think all of our personal journeys influence the way we think about life. I was both very unfortunate to be afflicted with a disease that is not a curable disease, at least not today, but we're working on it, called Crohn's disease. And I was diagnosed at a fairly young age. And what was interesting is that I was told that I would be facing challenges for my entire life, that there are very few things they understood about the disease, that the treatments were as bad as the disease itself, and that really makes you think when you're a 19-year-old, which I was at the time, about what things can you control in life and what mm-hmm. things can't you, right?
Mm-hmm.
So as I studied information systems and technology and I learned a series of industries, as you say, I tried to see, if you look at the manufacturing industry, which can be very complicated mm-hmm. in terms of all the components and pieces and parts that goes into creating, let's say, an automobile like a Lexus. And you think about what portions of that process can be controlled. How do you solve quality issues? How do you keep costs down? And how do you make sure along the life cycle of such a product, can you really put the right tools and techniques into both the consumer's hands and, let's say, the mechanic's hands to make sure everything goes right. The truth of the matter is that, and I think it's the third chapter of my book is called The Lexus and the Human.
Right. I don't want to be a Lexus.
Right. Well, it does postulate the question of if something was wrong with you, which would you rather be? And I don't want to be a Lexus either. I like being an animate object, but I do think that it's ironic, isn't it, that mm-hmm. a car has an electronic record mm-hmm. that follows it around all its life, and we as humans only now are in sporadic ways are starting to get that level of comprehensive information technology applied to us. But what's the basic lesson? The basic lesson is if you don't understand all the pieces and parts to solve a problem, then you probably can't solve it. And the problem in healthcare is that the healthcare industry is so big. There's one, you know, it's over $2.4 trillion, you know, in the United States. It's 18% of gross domestic product. And if you know hospitals, if you're a hospital expert, then you know hospitals. If you're a physician of a certain type, then you're an expert at that type of medicine. If you're a pharmacist, and then you can imagine I can keep going through the mm-hmm. list here, you might know your piece or your silo very well. You might even have very good information about your piece, but how do you play that to the whole? How do you make that so that the total experience and process for you or me as human beings is better? And that's how you apply system science to healthcare, and this is how we come up with integrated healthcare management.
This is Conversations on Healthcare. Today we're speaking with Jeff Margolis, founder of the TriZetto Group. He has a new book out titled The Healthcare Cure, How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better. Jeff, in your book, you say that given the information technology that exists, there's no reason we can't engineer a healthcare system to give human beings care that is coordinated, consistent, efficient, and based on the best practices available. Unfortunately, It's not that easy in the United States, given the wide array of political differences, policy and financial barriers that have gotten in the way over the last century. So why do you think now is the right time to introduce this new management system? And can you give us some examples of inroads you've made in testing out your solution?
Sure. Well, the first reason that the time is now is because this problem is getting red-hot critical. And we can't sit around as a country playing that blame game anymore. We have to say, okay, let's get real about what's working and what's not working. And as you may have noted in the book, it's endorsed by both a very prominent past Democratic senator and a very prominent past Republican senator, who both can agree on the concepts that if we design the tailored benefits for individuals. So, you know, Mark, Margaret, you and I all have different things about us, perhaps different income levels. We live in different places. We might have a different health status. You may have certain chronic illnesses. I don't. I may have certain that you don't. But certainly the technology exists to design a benefit plan that removes the barriers for me or you to get the care you need just because it makes common sense. In other words, if you have asthma and you need an inhaler, why would we create a financial barrier for you to get access to that, right? Okay, so that's the benefit side. The time is now. The technology to produce those tailored benefits exists. It's developed by the TriZetto Group. It's developed by other entities that have the capability to do this. Let's look at the reimbursement side. Everybody agrees. There's nobody standing up saying fee-for-service medicine, where we reward physicians for the volume they produce, makes any sense, as opposed to we need to start rewarding physicians for the value they produce. That value can be quality of outcome. So if you have a hip replacement or a knee replacement, certainly you want to be functional, right? You want to have range of motion. You want to be able to walk. You want to be able to get around. That's kind of simple to measure. But you don't want to forget little things like, oh, by the way, while you're doing that surgery, please prevent infection from occurring during the surgical process. Because, in fact, the infection during one of those that might result can cost people much more time and missed work and pain and suffering and cost the system a lot more money than just doing it right the first time. So everyone can agree on that, right? So best of benefits, tailored for individuals, following evidence-based guidelines so we provide the best of care, using information technology to bring those two capabilities together for you or me as consumers at the right place at the right time. Why wouldn't we start it now? It's going to save money. It's going to save lives. And it's going to change the dialogue from one of who is wrong and doing the wrong things in the healthcare system to how do we align physicians and consumers to do the right thing.
Jeff, speaking of the time is now, we're living certainly in the era of the gradual rollout of the Affordable Care Act, the legislation of the Affordable Care Act, and we'll see that continuing over the next couple of years as the exchanges come up. But I have a question for you. Much of what you're talking about, we see elements of it embedded within changes at CMS and the Centers for Innovation, the Office of the National Coordinator, Meaningful Use, Prevention, Consumer Engagement. But I give you the chance, if you'd been asked to write one amendment to add on to the Affordable Care Act that you think would have significantly enhanced it or taken this work that you're doing to the next level, what would that have been? What was missing that would have really made it an even greater piece of legislation in your mind?
If I could change one thing in the Health Care Act, which contains a net excess of $60 billion to help create improved electronic health records in physician office and hospital settings, I would have sprinkled in, let's take a low number, $5 billion, $4 billion, to give incentives to health plans that have, by the way, tremendous historical data on consumers because they pay claims of what the consumer's historical diagnoses are, what procedures they've been done, where they were done, who the treating physician was, so on and so forth, and to encourage the development of personal health records that are populated by payer data to complement the electronic health records populated by clinical data. Then we'd be off to the races.
All right.
Jeff, we'd like to ask all of our guests this final question. When you look around the country and the world, what do you see in terms of innovations, and who should our listeners at Conversations be keeping an eye on?
I'll give you one wild card one that I'm actually very involved with now as the executive chairman of a company called WellTalk, which is the emergence of how social media can better be used to engage consumers like you or me in what I call a new genre called social health management. We have a virtually untapped opportunity to take the resource of many, many people who have been through a lot of things. As you said earlier, Margaret, you know, if you've been through something, you're in the best position to give advice on it. That is yet an untapped resource in unlocking the power of information technology. It's an untapped resource that contributes to consumer engagement and integrated healthcare management. And I think you'll be hearing a lot about that.
Today, we've been speaking with Jeff Margolis, founder of the TriZetto Group, a healthcare technology solutions provider. His new book is called The Healthcare Cure, How Sharing Information Can Make the System Work Better, published by Prometheus Books. Jeff, thank you so much for joining us today on Conversations.
My pleasure.
We close with the Tech Report, our weekly look at how people are using technology to improve health and wellness. I'm Lauren Bonner. Dr. Jennifer Shine-Dyer is a pediatric endocrinologist. She's currently chief medical advisor at eProximity, a mobile health startup in Columbus, Ohio. She joins me to talk about her work as a physician focused on developing and using mobile innovations. Hi, Dr. Dyer. So you call yourself a mobile health physician entrepreneur. What does that mean exactly?
Well, as physicians, we are not typically entrepreneurs. And it's a completely different realm of the way that we were taught in school. But it also is very academic in that you're a problem solver as an entrepreneur. And that's basically what I'm doing, is solving problems in the healthcare system that I see as a practitioner, and I'm using mobile phones to do that. And because it's so new, it's best to be an entrepreneur, to really work from the consumer end, particularly in diseases like diabetes, where the patient or consumer is the one that's making the choices in their lives every day that affects their health.
Tell me about some of the ways that you were engaging your patients in your practice with their health through mobile technology.
Well, I did a pilot study with a small number of my patients, and I texted them. They had type 1 diabetes. They still have type 1 diabetes. They're all really great kids, and they have really great parents, but they were not taking all of their insulin like they should, because, frankly, they were just teens that don't want to have diabetes, and they're busy with their teen life, you know, dealing with boyfriends and picking colleges and all of the things that normal teens are doing, and diabetes just didn't fit into their picture. But I needed to remind them about the mindfulness of giving their insulin when they were taking meals. So I found by looking in the literature that, oh, texting is really powerful for that, because it's really meeting patients, particularly teen patients, where they are and where the way that they like to communicate. They don't like to talk on the phone. They don't like emailing. And they like texting, and they listen better. And I thought and hypothesized that, well, if I text them once a week, that they may be more mindful of their diabetes care, because instead of appointments every 3 months, they are actually getting a chance to talk to me every week. And indeed, it did correlate with better health outcomes, which we measure every appointment by something called a hemoglobin A1C.
And how did this lead to the new app you've developed?
So really, when I looked in the literature to see, okay, what are some health behavior models that really could help solve this problem, I kept coming across BJ Fogg's health behavior model. He is a health behavioralist at Stanford that runs a persuasion lab that's really shown in multiple conditions that whenever you provide three different factors with a technology, it can sustain a health behavior, a lot of health behaviors. So what you need, and all three things you have to have at the same time, is that you need a trigger or reminder, which is kind of what I was doing with the texting. But I wasn't doing the other two things, which are providing a motivation with the technology, and the third thing is providing information with the technology. So, because you can't stimulate a health behavior if you don't have all the proper information. So I developed in concert, in partnership with eProximity startup here in Columbus, a new app called the EndoGoddess app that provides all three of those things. So it provides motivation for, and the behavior that I chose is checking your blood sugar. So that's the target behavior.
What advice would you share with other healthcare providers who were interested in using social media with their patients? Is there advice you could give them to get started, or perhaps what to keep in mind with standards of professionalism?
Oh, yeah. Well, what I usually say is that as healthcare professionals, we are always being watched, whether we're on social media or not. And that's because we're leaders of the community. You need to be on, you know, good citizen behavior. And I think that's true about social media, too. It really is an extension of that same professionalism. If you're able to have an effect by providing information that helps people, I think it's worth the risk of having to censor yourself for professionalism, meaning that you just always have to think, is this something that I can say that is professional and appropriate? And I just don't ever doubt that it's the right thing to do, because 80% of people look for health information online. It's a conversation that's going on. And as physicians, just because you are a physician, people will follow you on Twitter and on social media because people are hungry for information for health, especially good information that they can consume and that they can really understand.
Where can people find more information about you?
The best place is endogoddess.blogspot.com.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dyer. It was a pleasure speaking with you.
That's Lauren Bonner with this week's edition of the Tech Report. If you have questions for Mark Maselli and Margaret Flinter, or would like to subscribe to the Conversations podcast, you can visit them on the web at chc1.com. The Health Forum is part of Connecting Our Communities from Connecticut Public Broadcasting in partnership with area nonprofits, and production support for Conversations on Healthcare has been provided in part by Community Health Center Incorporated. You're listening to the Connecticut Public Broadcasting Network.